Up next, a keynote presentation by Larry Augustine at the Open Source Business Conference entitled The Next Wave of Open Source Applications. Hello, this is Doug Kay, the executive producer of IT Conversations, and today I'm excited to bring you another session from the 2005 Open Source Business Conference. IT Conversations is underwritten by listener donations. Our audio content is delivered by Limelight Networks, the content delivery network for online broadcasts, music, movies, and software downloads, taking the cost and complexity out of internet distribution on the web at www.limelightnetworks.com. And now, here's our presentation from the Open Source Business Conference.
I'm Eric Schoenfeld of Business 2.0, and one reason we're involved with this conference is because we're really interested in uncovering new business opportunities. That's what this whole conference is about. Jonathan said something really interesting. He said that free does not mean no opportunity, it means a different opportunity. I think that's a great introduction to the next keynote speaker, Larry Augustine, who is one of the founders of VA Linux, and then he went on to Azure Capital Partners and was so interested in one of the companies that Azure funded, Medsphere, that he decided to go and join them. And I hope what he's going to tell you about is how Medsphere is taking clinical information system that was developed in VA hospitals and open sourcing it, and is actually creating a new market opportunity for community hospitals that might not even think about buying or implementing a clinical information system because they just don't have the budget or wherewithal or whatever. So here's a great specific example of how open source is creating a new market opportunity. So with that, Larry.
Great, thank you, and I want to thank Matt for giving me the opportunity to speak here today. Before I drill in, I also want to take a little poll. This is always an interesting conference for me because of the types of attendees. How many people here write code for a living? Well, that's interesting. There are a few hands that go up, about as many people as use open source desktops. How many people here are lawyers, legal profession? Good chunk of people. How many people are in the venture capital? Is that some applause here? Not quite sure why. Venture capital, investment space? That's interesting. Okay. For the past 2 years, I've been in the venture capital business with Azure Capital Partners. And during that time, I've looked at a wide variety of companies. Naturally, because of my background in open source, I spent a lot of time looking at things related to open source. And I began to observe something interesting. And, you know, the rest of you, particularly other VCs, are probably way ahead of me, particularly given that it was kind of late to the investment cycle and things. But I began to observe something that I thought was relatively interesting. And that was the emergence of open source in applications. And now, first of all, let me define what I mean by applications. When I'm talking about applications here, I'm talking about the big software that runs inside companies. Okay? ERP kinds of software, CRM, customer relationship management. And those are some of the things I'll talk about today. I'm thinking big software, I'm not thinking desktop applications. There's probably a similar talk here about the emergence of desktop applications as well. I'm thinking big enterprise. So, as I looked at that space and I began to notice this emergence of applications, I was reminded of something that Eric Raymond had told me, a good 10 plus years ago, whenever people would talk to him about open source and how open source developers and open source would never produce great applications. So Eric would start and say, well, you know, first we made games, and people said, sure, we'll make toys like games, but they'll never make anything serious like a compiler, development tools. Then, of course, we made compilers and development tools and everything that went with that. And if you look around today, most people now are building on open source development tools. And we've got things like Eclipse now in the development environment. Okay. So people said, sure, they'll make programming tools. They're a bunch of geeks. They're programmers. They'll make tools for themselves. Of course they will. They'll make anything that requires serious work, hard development, well, like an operating system. Well, I think we know the story there. We made operating systems. And people looked and said, well, yeah, they'll make operating systems. You know, they know Linux. They know Unix. They studied Unix in computer science classes in university, right? Of course they'll make that. They'll never make anything serious like big applications for business users. So we made applications. I want to know what they're telling us that we can't make now, because that's the next big thing. But yes, so we made applications, and that's what I want to talk about here today. The next wave of open source that I see happening is applications. How do I want to go through that for you today? I've picked four companies to run through as examples of what I mean by application here, and I want to use those as benchmarks for how we think about applications and open source, where we're going. Sugar CRM, who I think is exhibiting outside here today, in customer relationship management. Compere, which is an ERP company. Asterisk, which is produced by a company called Digium. Asterisk is an open source PBX application. I'll talk about it a little bit. And then, of course, my current company, Medsphere. Our business is based around an open source, actually public domain application called Vista. So I'll run through those, and we'll see some of those background on each of them. Then what I want to do is give you an introduction to each. Then I'll talk a little bit about what these applications have in common. In particular, I'm going to pull out of this what I think are, I'll call, six rules for identifying applications that I think are great places to look for open source. So hopefully help you think about identifying those and to look for them. So I think that'll be of particular interest to the investors and VCs in the audience, and also to those of you in software companies, because I think maybe some of you will see that your company and software space is potentially a target as well. Then I want to say a little bit about why now. Why is the wave of open source running into applications next? I've got a couple of drivers I want to talk about there. One is where we are in the wave of developer interest. And the second, and I think this one is a really important thing for everyone in the software space to think about now, and that is I believe the traditional enterprise software model is fundamentally broken. And I'll spend some time on that, because I think it's definitely worth spending. It's definitely a big change in our industry. Then related to that, if the big enterprise software model is broken, what does an open source business look like inside? And I'm going to go through an interesting exercise there. I like taking existing big enterprise software companies and kind of ripping out the upfront license fee, and let's see what would happen to them. So I'm going to experiment with one of those big companies today. And then I think you'll see the usual conclusions come out of that open source is here to stay, and that it's a fundamental disruptor of this enterprise software model. So let me go through my examples a little bit so that we're all on the same page and we understand what they do. First one I want to start with is Sugar CRM, customer relationship management software. Sugar is distributed under the Mozilla public license. I've got a URL up there. You can go and check out Sugar. An amazing success story for me for just this example of something that people had looked at as a big application that 10 years ago no one would have said, everyone would have said, of course they're not going to build CRM software. Who would want that? But yet you see here in Sugar exactly that out there. For a long time, Sugar was a SourceForge.net top 10 project, amazing traction. 20,000 downloads, 20,000 plus downloads per month now. I think it's more than that. 400,000 plus page views per month they're generating. If you go to their developer site, sugarforge.com, I believe they're now 25 plus related development projects happening. I think it's an amazing success story, and you can check them out in the back here as well. Next application that I want to look at, Compere, enterprise resource planning. This is the stuff that you use to run sort of the internals of your business. Accounts receivable, accounts payable, finance, inventory tracking, all of those things. It, too, is available under the Mozilla Public License. I think we're seeing a theme here with MPL, by the way. In many ways, not to digress on licensing, but in many ways, it's a great license for building commercial venture around, and that's why I think you see so many things built around that. But we'll save that for a different discussion. Compere.org, check it out. 800,000-plus downloads, 50,000-plus page views per month, now averaging. There was a recently there was a survey of by MySQL of their user base about what they're using for ERP. I think it's fascinating results. SAP, Oracle, PeopleSoft, of course now part of Oracle, and then Compere. That's not a bad place to fit on the list. Ahead of Bonn, ahead of Great Plains, Microsoft. That is an amazing success story to me. And again, we used to use ERP as the example all the time, 10, even 5 years ago, as something that would never succeed in open source because developers didn't care about it. Next thing I want to talk about is Asterisk. Some people fault me a little bit for throwing Asterisk up here, but I think that voice now counts as an application. And this is a fascinating one for me because it is not just an example of a place where you've got a piece of software in a traditional big software market, but it is completely disrupting a business model that, the PBX business model, that for years has been based on supplying everything from the handset at the desktop all the way through the wiring to the hardware to the back end and the software that runs on that. You can now get voice in your company by buying your computer from your usual vendor, you know, an HP, IBM, Dell. You run that server, you drop a piece of open source software on that, Asterisk, you've got a phone system. It's amazing. At MedSphere, we run Asterisk as our phone system. I am amazed at the number of startups I see now that put in Asterisk as their phone system. It's a great application for that. Lots of traction. One great statistics, there are over 130 Asterisk systems vendors worldwide. So that's the ecosystem built around this product. And finally, the company that I'm involved with now, MedSphere. This is, a fascinating story. It ties in with what I was seeing in applications, and it's why I became involved in the company. The Veterans Administration, over the past 20 to 25 years, built a system internally for running their hospitals, clinical information system, or electronic health record, as it's called. That software is available public domain. MedSphere has taken that public domain software and is now building an open source business around it, delivering that software to commercial customers. This is a piece of software that has over a $2 billion investment by the VA in building it, and has over 200 plus dedicated developers inside the VA continuing to produce this. It's a great example of how, it's a great example of technology transfer as well. And the funny thing about it is, it was built inside the VA originally as a sort of a skunkworks open source project. If you read the history of this, developers would come in at night to work on building it because they weren't allowed to be building this piece of software. And this was in the days when you couldn't take the computer home with you, right? You didn't have PCs at home. In fact, they would come in, they would work at night, and they'd be sure and leave a couple hours early because their machines had to get cold so that when their bosses came in, their bosses would look and say, okay, you weren't here working on this thing you're not supposed to be working on. In fact, the VA tried several times to kill the project, and it survived anyway like a true open source project internally. So I think it's a fascinating story, but it fits many of the characteristics that I want to talk about with open source applications and the market. Okay, next part. What do these have in common? What did I try and pull some rules together? And I found sort of six areas where as I looked at this set of applications, that I could begin to see patterns emerging. First of all, look for a traditionally a big, expensive, heavy application. Notice I managed to find four three-letter acronym applications. I guess I get some credit for that. But CRM, ERP, the PBX, and EHR. Big, traditional, heavy applications. Things that have long sales cycles. Things that are expensive. Things that are hard to put in. They take forever to install. Some of these take years. At MedSphere, our competition will go into a customer and tell them it takes 3 years to install the system. The view of the open source world, completely different than that. We put in systems in 6 months and less. Okay? And that's true for the other guys here as well. Big difference. Your competitors, big traditional proprietary competitors. They have a business built around a traditional enterprise sales model. They require large upfront software fees to get in the door. They are very, as a result, they have those long sales cycles. They typically require things like pilots to get started with the customer. It's not easy for the customer to get started. So your competition here is very vulnerable. They are dependent on that large upfront license revenue to make their business model work. Third characteristic, a large, enthusiastic, free user base that you can build off of. I think this is a very important point. If you look at each of these companies and applications, there's a lot of users out there. There's a great basis on which to build a business. And what does this mean? This means that you don't have to spend a lot of time educating users and marketplace about where you're going. You've got a lot of evangelists out there already. So if you look at Sugar with the 20,000 downloads a month, if you look at Compere with their ranks, you look at Asterisk, I don't know how many of you were at the Asterisk user conference end of last year. There were 250-plus attendees at that conference. This is people traveling to Atlanta for a piece of free software. And then what we have around Vista at MedSphere, this is an application used daily at 1,300-plus facilities today, 200,000-plus users, and 85% of all physicians have used the system at some point in their career. It tends to run at Veterans Administration hospital facilities. Many of those are affiliated with academic teaching institutions. As part of their residency, doctors will tour through there. So they've seen the application. In fact, the MedSphere started as a company because our founders, Scott Shreve and Steve Shreve, trained as doctors. Scott is a board-certified emergency room physician. We're doing their tour through their residency, went through VA facilities, and went through community hospitals, and said, what is this? We have this great system over here in the VA that's usable, and we have nothing over here in the community hospitals. We don't have that kind of integrated system. How do we make that work? Well, let's build a business around it. So, sales leverage here. You've got this great user base to build off of. Next characteristic, I think you need an enthusiastic developer ecosystem. Now, I was very careful in the word here. I use the word ecosystem. It doesn't mean that you've got all of your development is done outside the company, or that you have large contributions to the core code base for free from people outside the company. But what it does mean is that you have a community of people who do development with, around, or somehow part of the project that can participate. I think this is a big advantage to open source companies. If you look at traditional big enterprise software competition here, it's hard for individual developers to get to know, to work with, to build related applications, projects, and solutions around some of these big vendors, around SAP, right? Or you take the healthcare space in particular. where we're looking at systems from the likes of Cerner and McKesson. Developer can't look at those. It's very difficult for someone out there to say, hey, I've got a great idea for an application. How do I create something around that? I just can't go and get the system and build off of it. You can do that in these open source companies. You can start working with it, and you can build that kind of partner ecosystem. Sugar CRM is a great example of that on their SugarForge development site, where they now have these 25-plus related projects built around there, built around Sugar CRM. Asterisk, with their reseller and partner network worldwide, is a great example of that. Vista, there's something now called the Vista Software Alliance, which is a group of commercial vendors that have come together to help support and develop around the system. Some big names involved in that. So enthusiastic developer ecosystem. And what you get there is you get a lot of leverage with these people. So it's not the case now that you as a company have to produce everything. You now as a company have a model that enables other people to make money off of what you're doing, enables them to participate, and enables you to grow your solution for your customer so it's not all dependent on you. Okay, last two observations here. Number five. For all of these kinds of applications, you have a big enterprise market opportunity. This is enterprise software, it's enterprise applications, but not small market enterprise applications. Everything here is a big market opportunity. It's a big market opportunity first in the enterprise. Over $2 billion for CRM today in the enterprise. ERP is anywhere between 4 and 5 or $6 billion, depending on whose results you read and you want to add it up. Voice over IP is projected to grow to a $6 billion market by 2008. And if you look at the healthcare IT market, in the U.S. today, it's a $25 billion market by 2007. Very large enterprise markets. This means that you have up-market opportunity with these systems. Now, what's fascinating is if you look at most of the people on this list, they're not trying to sell into those customers today, but they have an opportunity to sell into those customers. That means you've got an opportunity to build a real large business. But where most of the companies start out selling in this space is a small and medium business and enterprise market. And that's my sort of sixth rule or factor here. Look for something that has a big opportunity in the small and medium business market. That's where I think that these companies will come out and grow and eventually be able to move up market. And if you look, the competition here has had a terrible time coming down market. How hard has it been for, say, a Siebel to come down market or an SAP to come down market? And yet, you find things like Sugar, Compuair moving up market. If you look at our strategy at MedSphere, we're coming out with Vista going into the small and medium market for EHR systems and hospitals, a market today that has 3.5% of physicians doing computer order entry. That's an amazingly small number. It means there is a huge market opportunity that is not being served by the big vendors. If today you walk into a 1,000-bed hospital, you probably find a Cerner or McKesson there. You walk into a 200-bed hospital, you probably find pencil and paper. There are more of those 200-bed hospitals than there are those 1,000-bed hospitals. That's where the market opportunity is. The same thing for these other applications as well. Asterisk is the darling of the small to medium business today. It's the darling of the startup in terms of putting in a phone system. Sugar is the same way as well. So in summary, big, expensive, heavy application, long and slow, an expensive sales cycle, vulnerable there, long implementation times. You have to do a pilot. You have to work to get in front of the customer. Big traditional competition, addicted to the enterprise sales model, a large, enthusiastic user base that you can build off of and that you have out there as advocates, an enthusiastic developer ecosystem that you've enabled around the product. You have a large market opportunities, both in the enterprise market, but in an underserved, probably greenfield, small and medium business market. And you have an opportunity to reach that market in part because you've got this free, enthusiastic user base to build on. So let's talk a little bit now about why now and why we're seeing this move happen. And I really have kind of two reasons why I've looked at this space, two things I want to argue. First is, again, going back to something that Eric Raymond used to tell me when we were talking about applications in the past. And that was developer generations happen in waves. So if you look at the amount of time it takes for a project to get traction, it's typically 5 to 7 years for a project to mature. If you look at Linux, I really say 92 to 99, kind of the maturity cycle there. Before, you know, 99, Linux was clearly established and clearly had traction, 7 years. So developer generation is 5 to 7 years. And what happens is, in each generation of developers, people look for the next big thing to work on. They look for the new challenge. So if operating systems have been done, and you're interested in making a name for yourself as a developer, and you want the next big challenge, you're not going to go build Linux. It's been done. Likewise, compilers. Likewise, a lot of these system development tools that have been done. Where do you begin to look today? Well, you begin to look at applications today. You begin to look for the things that haven't been done. We're now in that next wave of developers. They're looking for interesting things to do, and where are they turning their attention? They're turning their attention to this class of application. So, you know, it's interesting. You look at the guys who started Sugar CRM. Their history comes out of CRM. They looked at open source. They looked at ways to contribute. Open source CRM. Okay? Great example. So that's one driver that I see for applications today. The second one is, I think, a very important one for us as an industry to understand. That is, I think that the enterprise software model around today is broken. This is something that I've been looking at for a number of years now. I'm not the first person to say it. There's been a number of pieces of research out, but there is definitely a problem with enterprise software model today. Long sales cycles, it's expensive, it's inaccessible to the small and medium market. Look at the problems that those large companies that I listed before have had trouble going down market with, right? There is, as a result, there's this disconnect between license cost and product development, manufacturing cost. We always talk about that in the software industry. So what's happened is now, so where is that going? Well, there was a recent study done by, I think it was Rick Sherland at Goldman Sachs, that showed that 76% of new license revenue today now goes to sales and marketing in these companies. Look what we're doing here. What's happening in these big enterprise software companies is they're spending a lot of time convincing the customer that they need the software and then charging the customer for that time. There's something wrong with this model. We're charging the customer to convince them that they need our software. That's not a good economic model. I'm reminded of those CA commercials, you know, where the software sales reps and how much software today? How much software today? That's what's going on. And with open source, we have a fundamental opportunity to change that in the business. And so that's one of the things I look at in open source is that, you know, it's interesting. When Matt gave the introduction here, he mentioned the concept that originally we felt that open source was a development methodology. Well, there is still the sense that open source influences our development methodology. But if you look on the business side, open source is giving us a new way to think about the sales and marketing model for a software company. That large free user base is our sales and marketing tool. If you look at the companies that I listed there, rather than investing in big sales and marketing organizations, they're able to allow that user community to come to come to them, to come to us as a software supplier. So rather than have a pilot, rather than go through a year of selling, convince the customer to try it out, we don't have to do that. We don't have to pay to do that. The customer can download it for free and try it out. They're happy. They're interested. They need support. They need commercial extensions. They need someone's throat to choke. They can call the company. Well, now the sales cycle has gone way, way down. When we talk to customers at MedSphere, odds are they've used Vista. They know it. We're not having to convince them so much about Vista as we are convincing them that, hey, we're a startup, but we're a real company. We're there to support you. We have the expertise. This can solve your needs, right? We can support you there. The customer's already familiar with the product. So with that in mind, what I'd like to do now is take a little step, and I'm going to throw up some slides with numbers and things, so we'll see how this works in the audience here. But I'd like to take a step through and look at a traditional enterprise software company and say, look, what if we were to rip out that upfront license fee? And oh, by the way, what if we were to rip out that upfront sales and marketing cost as well and get some R&D leverage? What would the business look like? And can that be a profitable business? So the open source promise that I'm going to show you here. Reduce sales and marketing costs, free try before you buy a model. We skip the expensive pilots. We let the users come to us. And the result, I believe, is a fundamental business model advantage. And that's what I see as the difference that is enabling a number of these funded startups now to go out and compete against the big companies out there. It's a fundamental change to your business model. So I picked one of our favorite enterprise software companies, Siebel. Any Siebel users in the audience? One, two. Any Siebel people? Okay, that's good. So no one can contradict me from Siebel. So what I did was I took a look at Siebel's latest 10K filing to the SEC and just pulled the business model numbers. And those of you that are investors and venture capitalists will appreciate this, and I don't know, we'll see how everyone gets through it. But Siebel, I believe these are for fiscal year 04, if anyone cares, about $1.3 billion in revenue. You can see here software license revenue, $487 million, just ahead of maintenance revenue. The idea here is that about 36% of the business comes from software license. The rest, a big chunk of the business, is maintenance and support. Now, that's a very important thing to remember, right? A big chunk is maintenance and support. We'll come back to the open source model in just a second. Let me get through this. Let's understand where they spend their money. This is cost of revenue first. So what did it cost them to deliver that? Well, software license is cheap to deliver. You print some manuals and some CDs, and you support it a little bit, so that's inexpensive. Siebel happens to bundle maintenance and professional services together into one line, so I couldn't separate them out here. The zero line here is kind of an artifact of the way I put the models together for looking at companies. But professional services usually cost pretty close. You know, it's a small gross margin number. But you can see here there's a lot of profit in the software license. There's a reasonable amount of profit in the maintenance and support services as well. Where does Siebel spend its money? Well, an interesting observation you always have for a software company is they spend more on sales and marketing than they do on software, right? Which, again, where is the efficiency in that model? It's more about selling than it is about creating the product. The antithesis of open source, which is all about creating the product, and good users will come because the product is great. And we're beginning to see how that model develops. So, the interesting point here is the amount of money spent on sales and marketing. Okay, now I think from my previous discussion, you begin to see where we're going to go with this. So, let's go open source. What do we do? Well, we're going to take that upfront license fee to zero. We're giving away the software, right? We're not going to charge them that license fee to get started. Now, what are we going to charge? We're still going to charge people to install it, to deploy it, to support it, to be part of our network where we generate releases for them. Right? This is the Red Hat network or the JBoss network, however you want to look at it. There is an ongoing maintenance and support fee. And the interesting thing is, that's where customers tend to perceive the value today. What do they care about? Well, they care that there's someone there to support them. They care that they're getting updates, all of those pieces. But that big license number up front was a major barrier to them. They didn't understand it. Well, I can see now their issue. Why? It's because that big license up front was going to fund all that sales and marketing, which was just convincing you needed the software. Broken model. So we take that to zero. Revenue goes down, yes. Not necessarily a good thing, but we'll try and understand that in a minute because it's not necessarily that bad a thing either. Let's understand the cost of revenue. Now, I did something that is, what did it cost us to deliver this? Now, I'm assuming that our support and maintenance costs haven't changed a lot, and I think that's a reasonable assumption. They may go down. I did assume it continued to cost us money to give away the software. Maybe I've been overly conservative here in assuming it costs us the same amount, but you still had to give away the software. You had to enable people to download it. Now, maybe I've charged too much here. Okay, if I've charged too much here, then there's an opportunity for us to make more money in the business later. Okay, but I haven't assumed that it was easy for us to give the software away. Now, here's the big kicker is, what did we do with expenses? Well, what I said was, okay, on the sales and marketing side, you know, we can cut out a big chunk of that expense. And how do I look at that number? Well, I look at that as that 76 to 80% of the license revenue that we were trying to use to just cover things there, to just essentially convince the customer they needed our software. So we still have to have sales and marketing. The costs there are not zero. But now we've taken it down to a number that's more sustainable in the model. And also on the R&D side, now, we still do a lot of R&D, okay? In fact, we now do more R&D than we do selling and marketing, which I would think for a software company could be construed as a good thing. We've been able to cut our costs, not a huge amount in percentage. I mean, maybe we've cut our costs by 50%, but and we've taken advantage of the community to do, say, QA, but we're still building a lot of it ourselves. So the interesting thing, I think, relative to the open source community in this model is our leverage is in sales and marketing, not as much in R&D. That's an interesting thing. Now, on the bottom line, guess what? We've got a company that's an 11% EBITDA profitable company. Now, on an EPS basis, we're not quite as profitable here, but on a percentage of revenue basis, we're about the same. This is a viable, profitable business model. Now, I will further argue that this business model is more sustainable because in this business, I believe you have an opportunity to grow the market and go down market, whereas your traditional enterprise software companies today have hit a wall in terms of their ability to grow new license revenue because they're only at the top end of the market. They miss that SMB market space. So my argument for you is that model on the right here, Siebel open source is a more viable business model going forward because that company has an opportunity to go down market. So in response to the potential criticism that by doing this we shrunk the market, I say no. I say that the lower costs means a broader market availability. Some people have tried to come out and say that open source is a destroyer of markets. I disagree with that completely. I look at what happens when you lower the cost in a market that is vastly underserved. If you look at 3% of physicians doing order entry, or you look at 1% of the professionals, in the customer-facing professionals in the U.S. actually use CRM system, huge market opportunity. Lower the cost so that it's affordable to them. The growth opportunity for those kinds of businesses becomes huge. The traditional enterprise software companies today have hit that wall because they can't go down and sell to that smaller market because their sales and marketing business model structures don't allow it. The open source model does. So I'm just up to the end of time here. What did we learn? Summary of the open source advantages in this model. Short sales cycle. You don't have to pilot the stuff. The software is either enterprise ready or nearly enterprise ready, but the install time is much shorter. We've gotten rid of the upfront license fees, and we have this large and open developer and community base on which to grow on. So for the next big thing, where to look? I say look down market. Look for enterprise applications with all of those traditional enterprise application problems, but for which there is a large demand in the mid-market. And that's where you see the next wave of open source applications. Thank you.
You've been listening to a presentation from the Open Source Business Conference held in San Francisco in April 2005. Our audio content is delivered by Limelight Networks, the content delivery network for online broadcasts, music, movies, and software downloads, taking the cost and complexity out of internet distribution. On the web at www.limelightnetworks.com. IT Conversations is listener-supported, so please contribute to our tip jar. 100% of your donations goes to our team of volunteers who produce these programs for you in their spare time. The website producer for this program was Douglas Welch. Post-production audio by Gardner Campbell. My name is Doug Kay, and I hope you'll join me next time for another edition of IT Conversations.